All right.
All right,
Well,
let's get dirty.
let's light this candle. Cool. You ready?
Yep.
All
Let's go for
right. Tap.
it.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Girl Dad Girls. I'm your host, that QT Danny B. With me we have Bree St. Marie, and our special guest today is Natalie Fernandez. Everybody, yay, Natalie, hooray, all right. cool, well, welcome to the show. Natalie, Natalie, so you have Natalie on there. Do you want Natalie or Natalia or...
I'm fine with either, so.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Well, yeah, would you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I mean, I live quite a simple life, really. I mean, there's not really a lot to my life. I mean, I think it's, I get the feeling, like, because a lot of the people that kind of follow me and who I follow as well, like on Instagram and stuff, are in America. And so I get the feeling that things are definitely a lot more interesting over there.
Not really.
things are not quite so crazy in Britain. So,
you mean just like politically, or what do you mean?
Politically, yeah. I'm finding out at the moment because my boyfriend Ronnie's Danish. We've been together for almost a couple of years, and I'm having trouble. Like, we want to basically move to Denmark at some point in the next few years.
That's awesome.
And basically, it's a problem for me because Britain is not part of the EU anymore.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It would mean that basically, you know, kind of the only way that I think we could really do it is if we got married, kind of thing. So that could be potentially something big coming up in the next few years. We'd be getting married just to kind of get into Denmark, but obviously I'd be getting married because, you know, we love each other and stuff. But I think, it's just, there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of, there are a lot of, obviously, like, political issues, I think, like, in the UK. But I think compared to America, it's pretty minor.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got that right.
I think it's a lot more... I think generally, like, things are a lot more interesting out in America. Not just politically, but I think everything. So my life's kind of pretty simple. I've been transitioning for, like, the last 4 years. So...
Oh, nice.
Okay.
What has been your favorite thing that you weren't expecting about transitioning?
I don't really know. I mean, the thing that I always made sure to tell myself, because I'm quite an impatient person. So the thing I kind of always made sure to kind of tell myself, kind of like before I started medically transitioning was that I just needed to be patient. Because I knew it was going to be a marathon. Like, I knew, like, transitioning is a marathon, and I think, like, you can't really get it all done in, like, probably, like, the minimum time frame to get it all done is probably, like, 5 or 6 years, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of really kind of pushing it, and obviously kind of, that's obviously then kind of dependent also on what surgeries you have and also what kind of priority kind of, you know, you kind of put those surgeries in.
Yeah.
Yourself, kind of thing. So
something you said just there is you said done. So do you, a lot of our guests, we like to ask the question of is there a finish line to transitioning? A lot of people say it's kind of like this lifelong process. Some people say at this point, once I stop my day-to-day activities, stop being about the next step, that's when I'm finished. What do you consider, like, when you say done, what's your, like, definition of done for transition?
I guess it's interesting because I think obviously different people look at it in different ways, don't they?
Yeah.
And so sure. I never really thought about the fact that, like, because I never really thought about the fact of, like, that, you know, for me it was just all about getting it done. Whereas for other people, they don't necessarily think of it that way. They think of it maybe in a different way. So when I first started transitioning, or when I first, you know, decided that I wanted to medically transition, the first thing for me was getting on hormone therapy.
Totally.
Then I was like, I'm just going to leave the hormone thing, therapy. I'm just going to leave the tablets, the pills to do their thing. That's just going to take time. So I can just kind of put that to one side now and, you know, just take my pills every day and just kind of wait for that to happen. So the first thing was kind of getting on hormone therapy. The next thing was kind of facial, getting rid of my facial hair.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a lot of facial hair. So that probably, in terms of laser sessions, that probably only took me kind of maybe kind of a year and a half, maybe, to get that all done.
Oh, wow.
Lucky you. a lot.
And then it was kind of, and then I had my breast surgery 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so, awesome.
And then the next thing is, for me, is kind of reassignment surgery. So,
okay, so you are going with that. That's, you know, I know a lot of people that we've asked are, you know, they're so hot and cold on it, like, just because of.
I've always questioned it all the way through transitioning. I've always questioned whether it's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I've come back to the same answer, that I won't feel physically like a woman until I have this surgery.
Yeah.
But I've always questioned it all the way through, because I think that's kind of a good thing, actually. I think if I hadn't questioned it, it might have been more of a problem.
I talk myself in and out of it at least once a week.
Yeah.
Really? Okay. Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it?
It happened today, this morning. I was like all for it, and then I really thought about it. It's like, do you really want the maintenance of that?
I think a big thing for me is like kind of my kind of relationship with Ronnie over the last kind of couple of years. And I haven't felt comfortable sexually in terms of sexual activity with Ronnie. So, and that's something that, you know, I've been quite lucky that he's been quite patient to kind of just wait for kind of me to have surgery. So, but I guess, you know, it's not, you know, you have, unless you're kind of with someone that's that patient, I think it can be difficult, I guess, and for people maybe who are transitioning, who are in relationships and stuff. I think, it's also different as well, because it seems to me like a lot of the people like who I follow on Instagram who are kind of transitioning, they're in a relationship kind of like the opposite way, like with their wives kind of thing. So kind of a completely like the opposite thing. So for me, it was kind of like people talk about the question about, obviously, does it change your sexuality? I would say probably for me, it probably made me I kind of always felt I was bisexual anyway, but I think it made me more confident in terms of looking for kind of a man to be in a relationship with, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Kind of knowing that I was in a body that I kind of, you know, felt more kind of comfortable with, kind of thing. I had my referrals for just before Christmas for reassignment surgery. And, you know, they ask you these questions about this kind of stuff, you know, like, you know, kind of, do you think you'll regret it afterwards and stuff? And I'm like, you know, I don't know. Like, the point is, I'm 100% sure up until the point I have the surgery. Like, I don't know if I'm going to regret it afterwards. But actually, I kind of look at it in the way now. I was like, I've had like 32 years with like a penis. And I'm quite looking forward to having a vagina for the second half of my life, kind of thing. Yeah. You know, so it's kind of like, I'm not, I've had enough time to think about it, you know. It's something I've been mentally preparing for the last kind of, you know, few years in terms of gearing myself up for that surgery. So,
It's so interesting how, like, the doctors will, you know, even at our age, because, I mean, I'm almost 40, and they're still, like, they still ask me all these things. And it's like, I remember being a teenager and, like, actually making, like, plans to, like, you know, castrate myself because I hated it so much. And so it's like, back then, probably should have, like, questioned whether or not I actually meant it. But, like, now it's like, come on, doc, we don't need to have this rigmarole like I'm some sort of like pensive teenager.
Mm.
Like, yeah. I mean, I know for me personally, that's it is the goal, because there's something very dysphoric about putting on tight clothes and seeing the bulge, even though I know some people get really turned on by it. But
I haven't since I've been transitioning, I haven't really had. I mean, when I was a teen, I mean, probably going back to when I was a teenager, actually, probably not before that, because I was probably too young, but probably kind of from my early teens was when I first started thinking about my body and thinking that my body was quite kind of feminine, but actually kind of like not really. I think probably this was kind of probably like when I was 11 or 12, and obviously that's kind of like the early 2000s. And I think probably if there had been as much information on kind of transitioning now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Transitioning then as what there is now, I think it would have been, I might have transitioned probably maybe earlier, maybe kind of like in my teens, most probably, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, they ask you questions like, you know, they were asked when I had, you know, when I had these sessions, when I had these referrals, and they were asking me kind of questions in the interview, like, what toys did you play with? And to be honest with you, when I was like 5 or 6, all I was interested in was playing with kind of Lego and Playmobil.
Yeah.
And it kind of
gender
neutral
kind of
bugged
me
a little bit that they're kind of putting these gender things on toys. It's like, it's a toy. Like, girls play with action men sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, it's just, but yeah, so, yeah, I guess kind of.
That's so interesting. They asked you what toys you played with. That's so, I like, that seems
one
so.
One of them did. Yeah.
It's kind of a shitty question. Cause yeah. I mean, if the doctor asked me what I played with, of course it's going to be G.I. Joes and everything else, because that's what my parents bought for me.
And my friends played
with. I didn't
with.
Really have a choice.
I mean, kind of look. I mean, it was a shitty question. I mean, I agree with you there. But I think for me, it's kind of like my kind of focus was just kind of getting through them and just getting those referrals.
Yeah.
That's all I care about. I kind of, they're going to, I think, you know, until there's kind of, you know, I mean, this was from a psychologist, so like a gender psychologist. So, I mean,
yeah.
What can you do? Like, if they're going to ask those sort of questions, and you just have to kind of answer them as kind of as robustly as you can, kind of thing, and that's all you can do, really. But I don't, you know, I think it's a pointless question.
Yeah,
I don't think it has any bearing on, you know, what toys I used to play with when I was 6 or 7. Doesn't have any bearing on whether I'm fit and able and ready for gender reassignment surgery.
It's like, oh, you played with Legos, that means you're going to be a carpenter. And it's like, wait, what? Like, it has no bearing in anything else in your life, apparently. But it's like, you know, like, I played with, like Ninja Turtles. Apparently that means that I'm supposed to be a trans software engineer. One thing that you said is that you wish you had seen more material when you were younger. Like, what kind of things now, like, for somebody who's just, you know, their egg's about to crack, or they just cracked, what kind of like material do you wish you'd had when you first, like, when you were younger, like Instagram, Reddit, anything that
I mean,
more exposure?
I mean, I kind of, I wouldn't say I talk to a lot of people nowadays on Instagram. Obviously, if, like, you know, if somebody talks to me, like if one of you guys talk to me, then I'll obviously talk back and stuff. You know, it's not a problem. I think that's mainly just because I'm just kind of so focused. You know, I've just been so focused on kind of transitioning and just trying to live every day kind of thing. But I think, yeah, it would have been helpful, I think, like Instagram, definitely. I think social media would have been helpful, definitely, because I think kind of seeing other people's experiences and being able to relate it to my own and stuff.
Yeah.
I've got my own kind of, I've got my own kind of gardening business, and I branded myself as kind of Natalie the Autistic Gardener. Because basically, you know, I think I'm autistic. I'm pretty sure I'm almost 100% sure I'm autistic. I don't have a diagnosis, but I'm almost 100% sure, you know, kind of that's just purely from having done lots of research on autism and then kind of linking it to own experiences going back in my life, you know, to when I was kind of little sort of thing. But I know for me, it kind of helps. And I've had a lot of clients kind of hire me for kind of doing, you know, work based on they've got somebody else in their family who's autistic, or a brother or sister or a friend, or, and so, and I know that it helps for me kind of talking to other people who are, you know, going through those same experiences. So I definitely think like social media would have helped. Yeah. When I was 11 or 12. Yeah. When I was that age. Well, and I think Google as well, you know, I think if I'd have had the internet and access to that information, then
it's so interesting that like all these people, like, especially on the right, they don't hear that kind of thing. They see that, you know, we came out and later on in life, and they see that their kids see us and then feel comfortable. Like, you know, somebody who's 11 or 12 sees somebody, you know, a trans person now and feels comfortable coming out, but they basically base it around, oh, you converted my kid. And it's like, no, we just let your kid realize that it's okay. There's so many people who were like, you know, like for instance, myself, like we're just closeted until, you know, we felt comfortable coming out. So letting kids feel comfortable, like they act like we're like, you know, perverting their children. And it's like, we're not. It's just not. It's not the outcome that you wanted. So of course they're gonna find somebody to scapegoat for it.
Yeah, I think probably for me, I was closeted without really knowing it. I think I had a lot going on. I think probably I had a lot going on at school. I was kind of bullied a lot at school, and kind of I had problems at school and stuff with, you know, kind of fitting in with people and stuff. And I think when you are bullied at school, I think it takes away that time you have to kind of learn about yourself as well. So that probably didn't help. But I definitely think if you know, the internet had been as accessible as it is today, then I definitely would have probably transitioned in my teens. I'm pretty convinced. That's something I look back on now and I'm pretty convinced of.
It's not really exactly like we had a soft pillow to land on, you know, if we came out back in the 2000s either. And so it was such a, for me, I was in Texas, and that was a very, like, if I came out in 2000s or late 90s, it was just going to be a whirlwind of hell of just, you know, bullying and everything. So why the hell would I come out of the closet? It's like the material was there, but it was all just kind of surrounded by a deviant mindset.
I think it's so much more. This is the kind of thing that I'm talking about, where as well, where I'm saying it, I think it's so much more different in America because I think it's more toxic. I think here, like if people are transphobic in the UK, I think it's more just kind of words. Whereas I think in America, it's violence.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not, I mean, I know there was a schoolgirl who was murdered here not that long ago. I don't know if you heard of her. Brianna Gay.
Yep.
Yeah,
that made all the circuits around here.
Yeah, it's not a very common case here. That's quite a rare thing to happen. Like in America, that's happening all the time.
Yeah, it's like, I kind of feel like we're born and bred in violence, and it's just so much more normalized over here.
And I feel like parents are so conditioned now to, like, if their kids, you know, to raise the kids to basically say, you're going to be in my image. And if you're not, and if you have friends that are not, you know, everybody has this defined path that they're supposed to follow. And as soon as they see somebody deviating from it, they, you know, it's, you have to apparently convert all the, you know, all the heathens. I know I've lost a bunch of friends around here because of coming out as trans, and they just didn't fit into the playbook of what they wanted for their friendship with me. And it's like, you can really tell the people who are only out for themselves because they're like, oh, I don't think we should hang out anymore. And it's like, ah, okay. You didn't like me. You liked the convenience that I offered. But yeah, the violence is, I feel like it's, I guess it's also over here it's the younger kids, I think, because honestly, like, I knock on wood, I'm, you know, being in my late 30s, no one has, well, also I think I'm a little bit intimidating because you got the big guns. But yeah, I've knock on wood, haven't had anybody do anything like violent or like threatening against me. But yeah, I feel like the kids are just, they're kind of bred to be like, if you see somebody being different, you know, it's best to beat them up and show, you know, display your own strength by beating up somebody who's different. And yeah, it's yeah, I know when I was younger,
it does happen here from time to time, but I think it's a lot more regular in America. It's pretty you know, trans people probably get misgendered a lot here, but it's more kind of words rather than violence, I think. So
it's become so in vogue now over here. It's like, it's so trendy because
it's almost trendy to be violent.
Yeah, it's trendy to hate because everybody's looking for somebody to hate because we're doing so well over here now. With, you know, the economy's not that bad, so okay, so what do we do? Okay, the economy's not bad, life isn't really that bad, what can we hate on? Like, who can we have to find somebody to hate, and trans people are we're easy targets. Although I don't know, I'm super excited for it to change back to somebody else. In terms of your autism, what was, like, when did you start realizing that you had something that you kind of wanted to diagnose with yourself? Like, is it something that kind of, like, slowly came on? Is something you know your whole life?
When I was about probably 9 or 10, my mum took me for some diagnosis, and they said I didn't have autism, but that was in, like, 2001.
Okay.
And I feel kind of like the criteria, and I feel like everything's a lot more kind of different now.
Yeah.
It's a different, completely different landscape. That's nearly kind of 25 years ago. And
yeah.
That's the other thing as well. When I had my interviews for my referrals, that was one thing I didn't disclose at all because, you know, I kind of didn't want to put that in there because then they would try and kind of maybe use that against me. And I was like, I'm not going to mention that, you know, that has nothing to do with my decision, like, to have reassignment surgery, so.
Yeah.
We'll just leave that part out.
Well, it's one of those, I know when I was younger, like, I didn't get diagnosed with ADHD or, you know, anything, any of my attention issues, but when I was younger, but it's, I guess, because it was just so much harder to get, you know, they didn't understand it, I guess, as much as they do now, and especially with autism, I bet people kind of realize, I feel like it back in the day, it was so one or the other as opposed to being on a spectrum. But it's nice that you're able to, like, handle it and deal with it. Do you find it really has, like, an impact on your day-to-day, or is it one of those things that you can manage pretty easily?
Autism?
Yeah. Does it
I have meltdowns, yeah, sometimes. Oh, really? Okay. You know, sometimes I have meltdowns, but, you know, I kind of, you know, again, I'm kind of lucky that I'm with someone who's able to kind of deal with that. So Ronnie deals with that pretty well. So, but I don't, not all the time, and not very often, but, you know, occasionally kind of thing, you know. But
have you developed, like, in your like, techniques and stuff to dealing with that when you feel something coming on that, like, you know that this is about to happen? And you kind of, like, get yourself prepared to be in a way to deal with it?
I find it hard. Usually Ronnie's better at spotting the signs, the signals, before I can even spot it myself. So
gotcha.
Usually kind of he will kind of say something to me, and then that will kind of you know, make me kind of calm down, you know. So
oh, gotcha.
I'm not, because I find it hard to, you know, read a lot of signals and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes. That's...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I can't imagine. But, you know, good on you for being able to, you know, handle it. And I mean, especially with your Instagram, I'm just so impressed with all that you do and everything. It's very, you're a very inspiring person.
I don't really, I don't really do anything. Like, I just post photos of myself in like lingerie nowadays. So
it's very inspiring, though. So you have positive energy about you, and you spread that in a good way.
So. Yeah, well, it's nice. You know, sometimes, you know, it's always nice if someone's messaged me and they kind of say that it's helped them.
And especially with the autism, especially because your username, the ballistic autistic, and I think it's really nice to have that, like, have the visibility out there, because there's a lot of people I imagine who are suffering from that, but they hide it or they're embarrassed by it. But to have somebody such as yourself being like such a positive role model of, like, you know, it's not a death sentence. It's not a,
yeah. I mean, it's a shame. I mean, in a way, it's a shame that I couldn't, when I had my interviews for my referrals, it's a shame in a way that I couldn't share that as well in those interviews, because I think, like, it's actually had a part to play in me even transitioning in the first place. So, I don't mind talking about it. Look, it doesn't affect me by talking about it. So,
yeah. Well, it's kind of like whenever they ask you in the, you know, those interviews, they're always like, have you ever had suicidal thoughts? And of course you always answer, no, of course not. Who would ever, but it's like, I can't imagine a trans person. Like, I would say more often than not, I feel like most people have had those kind of thoughts just because they don't feel comfortable in our bodies. And, so it's like, you know, we can talk about it now, but yeah, definitely when you're talking to your doctor, you hold that in, because it's like, they're trying to find a reason to not give you the medication. And it's like, look, this isn't going to make anything worse. It's only going to make things better.
But I mean, I guess it's just like luck of a draw, like, which kind of docs you get as well, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things that I like to highlight in these things is, like, if you have a doctor that you don't think is being supportive, I know for me personally, I had a therapist who was negative, like, who did not support trans people, and was very, she made me sit through these interview after interview with her. I had to go for 6 months before she would even write me a prescription to go see it, or write me a referral to see an HRT doctor, because she wanted to make sure I wasn't just making it up. And it's like, it's not like doing like controlled substances where it's like, okay, you know, I'm making, you know, I want to abuse this. Like, no one's going to abuse HRT. So
yeah, it's not a harmful kind of, it's not a harmful drug particularly.
Yeah. It's,
Ronnie always says to me, it's crazy. Like, Ronnie always says to me, like, you know, kind of like, you've got drugs like cannabis and cocaine, which are banned. And then you've got a drug called alcohol, which is far more harmful and far more dangerous and does far more damage to people, which isn't banned. So it's kind of like,
yeah. Oh, and yeah, I mean, you know, it's so easy to get on Adderall and Ritalin and Concerta. I mean, I'm on Concerta right now, and it was easier for me to get on Concerta than to get on HRT. Because it was like, a substance that I could very quickly and easily abuse if I wanted to.
And these are painkillers.
Say what?
And these are painkillers.
Oh, no. Concerta is for ADHD. It's it's a part of the methylphenidate, which is just kind of like it regulates your, not dopamine, but your serotonin, or it regulates a bunch of your chemicals that keep you are you familiar with Ritalin or Adderall or any of those?
Basically, it's also to do with the happy kind of chemicals, isn't it?
Kind of. No? it's like a focus thing where, like, if you get distracted easily, it helps you to kind of like avoid those distractions. I guess because it's part of like the meth family, it kind of speeds you up a little bit, but it also allows you to like hyper focus. It's like, it's all these things that they never diagnosed when I was younger. They just thought I was a bad student. They were like, oh, well, at the time I was David, and they were like, well, David just can't sit still. And it's like, there's a reason.
There is a reason.
So, In terms of your transition, I guess what has it been like with your family? Have they been supportive? Is that when you when
yeah,
you came
so
out?
My family have always kind of been supportive, and you know, I've always kind of had a fairly good kind of support network around me. So yeah, so it's from that kind of point of view, it's kind of no issues really. So
that's good.
So that's obviously kind of made it. It obviously makes it easier, you know, but
yeah, it's I think it's one of those times when you like tell your parents the first time, like it's such a like ingrained. Did you make a big to-do about it, like, you know, ask telling them you need to talk to them, or is it just sort of like off the cuff, like, hey, by the way, this is what I'm doing?
Yeah, I wasn't in the kind of three or four months kind of leading up to kind of telling my family, I wasn't kind of in a good way at the time. I was kind of drinking and stuff, and I was preparing for kind of how I would tell them, and you know, yeah, making down notes and whatever. But you know, it's, you know, when yeah, as you probably know, you know, when you kind of come to telling people, it never goes the way you planned it anyway. So
absolutely, yeah.
So but yeah, it's not, you know, obviously it's a shock in the beginning, but I mean, yeah, you know, they kind of, you know, came around to it pretty quickly, and you know, it's not kind of yeah, it's not been an issue, it's never really been an issue. So
that's really good. That's
which makes it a lot easier, because it's not obviously always like that for everyone. So
yeah,
but I've just kind of all the way through you know, had the mentality of, I've just kind of zoned out. And I think, like, I've always kind of said to myself, look, people are going to be on board or they're not going to be on board, you yeah, know, and I kind of, you know, I'm doing this anyway. But obviously, yeah, you do need your family behind you. Absolutely. I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's important to, like, yeah, like, either whether it be your family that you were given or a family that you choose. I know a lot of people that have, you know, they came out and they lost their mom, they lost their dad, they lost both because they, you know, it wasn't in the cards for. I know when I first came out, my dad had a really hard time with it. Like, we were sitting at a diner and he kept saying, "What does that mean? Well, what does that mean?" And the thing that he was really concerned about was that I was going to start sleeping with guys. And I was just like, that's the main concern here. Okay, cool. Like, he's a born again Christian. And so of course it wasn't in the cards initially that, like, he would have a child that was transgender or a child that was gay or lesbian or anything like that. But yeah, like I've then started to realize, it's like, you know, you can have other family. And if you're a family if your parents are terrible parents and they can't love their child for who they are, find different ones.
I think with my family, it's kind of, once they saw that I was happy and comfortable in myself more and more, then, yeah, you know, it was kind of, then they kind of, it was easy for them to support it, you know, so.
Yeah. I mean, what parent doesn't want their child to be happy? If you're listening to this and you're a parent and you don't want your kids to be happy being who they are, then you're a terrible parent and you should stop.
Yeah. 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 But there are obviously lots of people who transition whose parents are like that. So
yeah, absolutely. I have a daughter, and whoever she decides to be, whatever she wants to do, I love her for her. And that's all that matters. You know, if she's happy, I'm happy.
Yeah. So,
I did want to ask, like, when you, because I know for me, there was like this point, it was like a pinprick that sort of set off that opened up the floodgates of, you know, of transitioning being possible.
Mm.
Like it was one friend who I mentioned is like, yeah, I kind of always wanted to be a girl. And she was like, well, why don't you? And for me, that was just sort of like, wow, I can actually do this. Yeah. Was there like a moment that you can remember where you, like, it kind of went from like this dream that you had to kind of like being like, oh, this is possible?
It's so weird, because it's like I always had feelings on and off, not all the time, about my body from probably when I was like, probably going back to probably when I was like 11, 12. You know, just about my body, you know, like I would look at my body in the shower and think my body was quite feminine or female, but
yeah,
not really kind of thinking too much beyond that.
Yeah.
Again, probably because, you know, I've kind of concluded now, because there wasn't the information that there is now. If there hadn't been, yeah, if there had been, and if I'd have been able to kind of talk to somebody about it or know where to go in terms of social media and all the rest of it, which didn't exist, you know, when I was 11 or 12, then I've, you know, it's kind of then I probably would have realised. I think, so on and off, probably up until kind of like my mid-20s, maybe.
Yeah.
I was kind of exploring anyway. I was exploring, like, with my sexuality. I'd had a couple of experiences with guys and it just didn't feel right.
Yeah.
And I play table tennis in my local league.
Oh, awesome.
Well, I used to. I've just given it up. But there was, this was kind of in the autumn of 2018. So there was a league match that I was playing and I kind of left early because I wasn't in a great place. And then I went, and then I just kind of left and I went to the local kind of Asda supermarket. 24/7, and I went up there and I just kind of bought a I bought a red wig and I bought a pair of tights, and I went home and I just tried it, and I bought a bra as well. I bought a bra as well, and I went home and I tried it on in a mirror, and then all of a sudden it was, that was like my kind of eureka moment.
Okay.
And so that was when it all hit home, actually. Now all of a sudden this is, that was the moment where it all hit home, and now all of a sudden this all makes sense, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where it's, and so like, it's literally like that. So
yeah,
all the time before that, I just had feelings on and off about my body and nothing more. No dysphoria, kind of nothing really, kind of. And looking back now, I was probably dysphoric all the way through. I just didn't realise it, kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, I was probably, the reason why I was kind of unhappy all the way through was for kind of this reason, but without really kind of being able to kind of figure it out, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's like, I remember for me, up until like the point where I was like, I'm going to start looking into actually getting on hormones, it was always just jealousy of the female body. And it was like, I just thought I was some sort of deviant because I was like, I was trying on women. I had women's clothes. I remember when I was like, 14, 15, going to the, we were in Grand Cayman, and I went to this bathing suit shop and got a one piece bathing suit. And I told him that it was for my sister, and went home and I coveted that thing. I held it and like, I wore it around and tried to be as feminine as possible, but it was always, I just thought it was so deviant because I was like, this is just something I'm not supposed to do. And it was like, like I was doing drugs or something. But once that girl said, why don't you, it was like, oh, well, okay, I could. Like HRT, HRT wasn't that HRT was a bad thing anymore. It was like, okay, this is something that will help me. So
mine was definitely face app. I feel like been that, talking with my therapist for so long already about the whole thing, and it was still just like something that was unattainable. And finally, I was just sitting at work one day and I downloaded, I was like, what the hell's face app? Everybody's talking about it, blah, blah, blah. Everybody's doing the gender swap. So I downloaded it and I did the gender swap, and what the AI churned out was just like, holy fuck, this is actually attainable. Like, and that is what set me off. So thanks Apple.
I did the face app thing recently, actually, the schoolgirl one.
It made me feel
there were several photos in there. I was looking at them and I thought, that is how I would have looked like if I'd have transitioned when I was 14. Yeah.
I couldn't do it.
I kind of, it made me feel, for a little while after, it made me feel quite depressed, to be honest.
And that's,
you know, because it made me realize, like, I should have transitioned when I was younger. Like, I wish I'd have known when I was younger. I wish I'd have been able to have the foresight of mind to be able to have known that, you know, this is what I needed to do. And it would have solved, looking back now, it would have solved a lot of my problems in terms of bullying, because I wouldn't have been, you know, trying to impress people. I just would have been myself, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
I guess it would have opened a whole different door of bullying. I mean, like, you know, we still get bullied now, but yeah, it would have been like, instead of being bullied for, looking like a feminine boy, you're like, okay, now I'm trans, you're LGBT, now you're different. So of course we still got to bully you. One thing that I do like to, like, kind of mention is, like, so for me, I know, yeah, like, seeing those things, it's like, well, that would have been nice to be in high school and, you know, kind of be in the right body. I just feel like I like to highlight for a lot of people who are older, you know, like, for me personally, I benefited the crap out of being, like, a straight white guy for a long time. Like, I always say I milked the crap out of that white male privilege. I got to get a job, I got into, you know, college and everything. I got a bunch of benefits that I normally wouldn't have had. So it's like, I wouldn't be who I am now without having been David for 37 years. But yeah, it's definitely different. I feel like life would have been a lot harder if I'd been a trans teenager in Virginia. Probably wouldn't have gotten the same opportunities. But yeah, it's, you know, it's so weird because it's like, I would have been happy with myself, but I probably wouldn't be as financially well off as I am now. Do you ever, like, are there things that you feel like you benefited from going, like, lasting into your late 20s when you started hormones?
Yeah, I was 27.
Okay. Yeah. Like, do you think that was helpful to do it at that point, or do you think it was just the time
that I worked it out in my head, yeah, and I realized that this was the thing that was bugging me my whole life, yeah, most probably, and it was just that particular point it came into my head, you know, and it was like everything made sense in that moment, kind, yeah, of thing.
That's awesome. I wish that was 10 years before. I wish I had done it at that age. That
it sounds strange because obviously I know a lot of people say, you know, they realized when they was like 4 or 5 or 10 or 11, you know, but
yeah,
you know, I had feelings at that age, but I didn't, looking back now, I had feelings at that age, definitely, but I never really, I was never really going to be able to piece it all together at that age.
Right.
For me, anyway, you know, other people can, obviously, but yeah.
Yeah, that was 10 years old for me. I knew something was off, but I didn't know what it was.
Yeah. That's awesome. I think that's a great discussion. I really enjoy, like, hearing that kind of, like, everybody's opinion on that kind of stuff. Kind of wanted to take it a little bit lighter just so we can kind of wrap up the regular hours, but we do have, like, some kind of lighter questions, if that's okay.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
Okay, so one of my favorite questions, and it's the one we've been asking for the longest, and maybe you've heard of it, but Natalie, what is your transition theme song?
Theme song?
Yeah, like what song?
What song resonates with me most, kind of thing, in terms of...
Yeah, like was there a song that, like, kind of like that got you through some hard times, or like when you look back, you're like, this song is what, like, inspired me?
I don't know, like, I kind of listen to all kinds of music nowadays, like, and I kind of have done for a long time. I think, like, it's interesting, when I was a teenager growing up, probably from about the age of 11 or 12, when I was at school, it was probably one of the reasons why I got bullied, actually, but anyway, I don't care, because it's like 15, 20 years ago now, so...
Yeah.
But when I was at school, when I was a teenager, I was a massive Elvis fan.
Awesome.
So my thing was like I wanted to be an Elvis impersonator. So that was kind of like,
so cool.
So I used to get, like, you know, when I was like 12 or 13, you know, 14, I used to kind of like, when I was like 12 or 13, I used to kind of like get the ironing board out, pretend it was a band, you know, like have the microphone, you know, the remote control and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
No, I'm still a massive Elvis fan, but I like loads of other music as well. So I wouldn't say there's a particular song necessarily that resonates. No, okay. That's a hard one, you know.
Yeah. Well, if you think of it, let us know. I'm making a playlist for all for everybody.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's one of my favorite questions, just because like some people have like this song that just boom, that is what. That's, you know, that's my song.
I'll tell you what, I got in for quite a while. I got into kind of listening to kind of there was a period of transitioning where I kind of listened to kind of a lot of Ricky Martin. So
amazing.
So yeah,
Living La Vida Loca. Wait, is that Ricky Martin?
No, yeah, but the one I was listening to a lot for quite a while was She Bangs.
Oh.
Oh yeah! Didn't we all?
Yeah, all right.
Good jam.
That's a good
song
one.
And kind of the pace of it and stuff. I just love that song. The beat and stuff. Yeah,
I love it.
Just so good. You can put that one down, I guess.
Okay. That's awesome. I love it.
Done.
Cool. Well, that's awesome. This has been like so. It's so great to. I love these like deep conversations. To talk about that. Bree, did you
want to stop? Conversations.
Yeah, Bree, did you have your question? Or
yes, I do. This is a new question that we've started asking in the last couple weeks. But if you wanted to see anyone on this show, who would you call out to be a guest on it?
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Good question.
Kind of like the ALS ice bucket challenge.
Do you mind if you just flick through my Instagram now?
And
just
quickly, absolutely.
Just quickly see.
Why are you doing that? What is your Instagram? Like, just we're gonna put it up so everybody can follow you. Anybody who doesn't.
The ballistic autistic. So.
So we'll put that on. We'll put that in big letters, and let me put a mark because I can remember to mark that.
But it's cool. Yeah, it's like ver, and then it's kind of an underscore, and then it's ballistic underscore autistic kind of thing.
Cool. Yep. Yeah. That is perfect. Yeah. I will put that in there, everybody.
Awesome.
If you're listening to this and you don't follow Natalie, you definitely should. She's amazing and super cute. So.
Mm-hmm.
Who would I recommend? Go on. I don't know, but it's really difficult.
We should get Ronnie on here.
Hmm?
We should get Ronnie on so we can. That'd be fun. Really? Ronnie, your boyfriend.
Oh, Ronnie! Yeah.
We should get him on sometime.
You could get him on, yeah. I guess.
That's awesome.
I guess. No, it's kind of
That'd be fun to like.
You got the one Okay, I'll throw out one. Have you got the one, you know, is it Alana Bahama?
Oh, yeah, she's coming on.
In a few weeks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No.
Because I follow her and she follows me, so it's kind of like...
You're getting your wish.
Kind of suggested, so...
Well,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I guess we can go ahead and start wrapping up the regular, because, we can get into the after hours, but... Now it's like a final thought. Like you're really inspirational. I remember when I first found you on Instagram, I was just I love your passion. I think you're amazingly attractive, and I love what you're doing in terms of like showing the community that autism is not something to be ashamed of. It's something to embrace, and it's not to hide away, not to keep it hidden away. Because it's a beautiful thing. So
no, I just like I've never really, I can't. Yeah, I've never really kind of seen the. For me, it's kind of like I've just kind of like that's not really something that I can really do. Is kind of hide. So for me, it's kind of you've just got to kind of be all out there and kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's hard, you know. It's not easy for everyone. So
for sure.
So that's kind of been my kind of attitude, I guess, is try and be out there as much as possible.
I love it.
I probably don't talk about transitioning as much anymore, kind of on my Instagram. I don't talk about it often, but I try and keep it just kind of, you know, a bit kind of light and stuff. But I try and talk about it sometimes because I've realised that actually when you get messages from people occasionally saying kind of like something I've posted has really helped them, then it kind of makes me think, actually, you know, if I can kind of do that for somebody, you know, then it's kind of maybe once in a while it's kind of helpful for people. So
yeah, absolutely. But Bree, do you have you want to do final thoughts, Bree?
Sure. Yeah, Natalie, thank you so much for coming on. I think you were probably within the first five people that I actually followed for my account way back in the day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You were one of the OGs.
How long ago was that?
Yeah, that was probably February of last year.
Awesome.
Oh, coming up on a year. But yeah, that you've been delightful. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah.
No problem at all. Yeah. There's so many people who follow me, like I don't even know they're following me, so
yeah.
keep track. I think once you get past like 15,000-20,000 or so, it's just like, you know, just kind of,
it's just a number at that point.
I think probably soon, once I think if I get to 50,000, then I go past that, it's just, it just becomes irrelevant at that point.
Well, awesome. Well, thanks. Thanks for coming on. Thank everybody for listening. All the listeners out there. If you're part of our Patreon, then we'll see you in the after hours. But if you're not, then this is where we're going to leave you off. And I hope everyone had a great time listening. And hopefully we'll see you in the after hours. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe. And for Girl Dad Girls, I am that QT Danny B.
I'm Bree St. Marie.
And our lovely guest, Natalie Fernandez, the Ballistic Autistic. And we'll see everybody in After Hours.
This has been a production of Girl Dad Girls Podcast. Check out new episodes every Thursday. If you are interested in knowing more, please email info@girldadgirls.com or find us on Instagram @girldadgirls. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe.